Welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm Dominic Cavendish and I'm sitting in the Orange Tree Theatre with Paul Miller, the artistic director. I don't know whether a fringe or off West End theatre has ever qualified for entry into the Guinness Book of World Records, but it strikes me that the Orange Tree might be an ideal candidate. The previous artistic director, Sam Walters, was in the post some 42 years, which is the longest serving artistic directorship in the country. His successor, on the other hand, was only at the helm for a matter of minutes when the Arts Council landed a bombshell that it was withdrawing the entirety of its annual funding. Paul, I hate in a way to kick off by asking you to revisit possibly one of the most painful moments I think any new artistic director's ever had to face, but what was it like to walk into the job and then receive that piece of information?
Well, I think, as the Scottish king said, so fair and foul a day I had not seen. Because it was and is still an incredible honour and a privilege and a challenge that the board handed me to pick up the baton from Sam, you know, whose achievement is extraordinary. In fact, the early 70s it was, above the pub next door now, at the Orange Tree pub. From absolutely nothing, from just an idea and a group of friends, to make a theatre that had an identity and did an extraordinary range of work and build it up and acquire a building across the road that he could transform into this very, very special and unique place, and then go on and build it and build it and build an audience and build a reputation. You know, it's great to be able to be asked to pick up from that, if somewhat daunting. And that remains a very special thing. However, yes, on the day when that was announced and we got the phone call, it's really tough. But the theatre is tough. You know, life, change is part of life, and I think it's important that we take a philosophical view, which is, after all, that there was a moment where the Orange Tree received funding for the first time in the 1970s. In order for that to happen, something else had to give. There has to be change in arts funding. Things cannot just simply stay the same. So one has to be philosophical about that. And we have to find a way of doing business in a new way that looks for support from private sources, whether that be from individuals who are very, very enthusiastic about us, or businesses, or trusts, or foundations. And actually, you know, we have another huge, huge asset here, which is an audience that had been built up that are very loyal to the Orange Tree and love coming here and love seeing the range of work. That's a fantastic asset that not every other theatre has. And on top of that, it turns out that there are other audiences, that there's a real appetite for coming to Richmond to see unusual plays, whether they be new or not so new, in this very unusual space. So that's a huge asset, you know, to which we have to capitalise on. So it seemed to me that maybe the moment sort of culturally and politically had passed where days which I remember of Peter Hall standing on the coffee table denouncing the Arts Council and closing the Cottesloe Theatre in the 1980s. It seemed to me that that moment had passed, really, and that we had to have a bit more of a grown-up relationship with the Arts Council and keep in conversation with them.
Well, you're being at once philosophical and even-handed and admirably, as it were, focused on the future rather than harbouring resentments about what may or may not have been. But I suppose it's worth lingering just a tiny bit longer on this point, because it seems as though, in some ways, although other organisations did suffer funding cuts, an extreme level of removed support, it felt, at the exact moment when there was regime change. I mean, it's one thing, I suppose, to look at an organisation that may or may not be delivering what is perceived to be the goods, and then if you have, as it were, an announcement to make about the direction of travel, and then that direction of travel is, as it were, almost derailed by a sudden blot on the funding landscape. I mean, it must have felt odd, that decision. I mean, there were letters, people felt very aggrieved on your behalf. Is there any way, as it were, of unpicking the rationale behind it to work out whether it's, in some ways, the Orange Tree was just very unlucky, whether there is a different kind of mood? You talk about a shift, perhaps, in the cultural climate. I don't know whether it's is it as broad as that, or
I think the timing thing was just acutely unfortunate for everybody concerned, and I sort of include the Arts Council in that, to be honest with you, because the timing of Sam's departure and thus my arrival had nothing to do. It so happened that it was entirely in sync with the decision process of the Arts Council, but that was an accident. And, you know, it happened to be the year when the Arts Council were under probably the most pressure themselves. They'd sort of had, as an organisation themselves, they'd cut themselves in half and were under pressure. So I just think it was tragically unfortunate timing. But it's hit us very, very hard. It's conceivable that there are lurking prejudices around in corridors and offices about leafy Richmond and the ability of a well-off area of southwest London should perhaps be asked to pay for its own theatre in some way, is perhaps an assumption that's lurked around. That's never been explicitly said to me as the view of the Arts Council, but I wouldn't mind betting that that is a part of how people tend to think. And of course, the situation on the ground is just hard. It's harder than that. Because Richmond Council, for instance, are fantastically supportive of us and continue to fund us at the level that they did before. One of the reasons for that is not just because of the core work we do on stage, but because we have fantastic education and community work, which I inherited, which Sam built up, which we do for the borough and for surrounding areas. So that is good, but I don't take that for granted, because not all local authorities around the country, when they have theatres on their patch that are in trouble, are so supportive. They are brilliantly supportive. But no council feels themselves having cash to spare at the moment. So that it's not like they can step in and fund this theatre to the degree that it needs funding. What people underestimate is that theatre buildings, which come under attack a little bit here and there in some critical quarters, there's a sort of view around that, oh, surely we should bail out of buildings altogether and we should fund things in car parks and cupboards and pop-up theatres. And I think all that work is fantastic, but theatre buildings do have a very important function. But they are expensive, and 168 seats means that, given that we've got an audience that wants to see plays here, and audiences that want to come and see the different things we do, that's great. But with 168 seats, we will never be able to earn our living at the box office and still be a professional theatre where everybody's paid decent, you know, the proper going union rates for the work, which I believe we should be and the industry should continue to be. But that number of seats, it needs some support in order for it still to be a professional theatre. So we have to strive to find a way of making it add up in a new way, and hope in 2 to 3 years' time, when the next round comes around of decisions, that we might be in a strong position to make another request for some core support. And it's true that quite unfairly, in some ways, there was an element of perception about what had been going on here that wasn't quite true to the reality, in fact. The perception, the lazy perception perhaps, was that there'd been quite a soft focus or soft-edged concentration on a certain kind of period revival of out-of-the-way plays. In fact, Sam was routinely doing new work, for instance. It's just people didn't focus on that. I think one of the interesting things that's happened artistically in London, particularly in the last 10 to 15 years, is that whereas when Sam started, and then in the 80s and 90s, doing undiscovered plays, rediscovered plays, things that people literally never heard of or seen for 100 years, there's now many more theatres, or there are other theatres doing that, like the Finborough, like the German Street and others. And so the Orange Tree is no longer the only person doing that. But another much more interesting thing has happened, which is that the National Theatre, the RSC, who vacated London almost entirely, Hampstead, the Almeida, no longer do what they used historically to do systematically, which is the interesting, well-chosen, pertinent revival from what used to be called the repertoire. And so now Hampstead, for instance, is seen as being a new plays theatre, which it wasn't always historically. Obviously, ditto the Almeida. And so it's created, actually, an interesting artistic space for us, because in this last season we've done D.H. Lawrence's The Widowing of Mrs. Holroyd and Bernard Shaw's first play, Widower's Houses. And you'd be amazed at the number of people who said to me, oh, gosh, I've never heard of those. I don't. Oh, sounds fascinating. Mm. A lot of people, amazingly to me, said, oh, D.H. Lawrence, who's done the adaptation? You know, the fact that we've, again, a cycle has gone round where we have to reintroduce the idea that he wrote plays is fascinating. So I think there's a lot of fertile ground for us, actually, of looking at interesting plays from the past like that, side by side with very sharp plays being written now. And that's what I'm interested in, I think. And so there's a sort of... It's interesting the way things have shifted.
Was it a feeling of that you wanted to create in that first season a sense of reassurance? I don't know how much is a template, a template for the kind of mix you're going to have in the coming years. Is it feels about right to you? New pieces sitting alongside the old.
Yeah, that fundamental formula, if you like, which is picking up from where Sam had got to, if you like, is what I'm about and what I was clear that I thought, you know, when I was appointed then, that was my fundamental stance, and that it was a way that we had to balance. We had to bring as many people along with us as possible, whilst opening the theatre up a little bit more to new kinds of work, new people doing it, and thereby hopefully attract new people as well. So we sort of wanted to try to do both. So the board, for instance, might easily have appointed somebody who wanted to make a decisive, total break with the past. They chose not to do that, and that's not me. But equally, there's more to do, because I've been incredibly encouraged by being able to do new work like The Distance, like Pomona, like Little Light, interesting revivals of things like Mustafa Matura's play Mass, which perhaps wouldn't have been here before. It's terribly encouraging that they all play to more or less full houses. It means that there's a lot of possibility for the future to go forward and extend that and diversify the range of work. It's really encouraging. Mm. To talk about Pomona particularly, I knew as I started reading it that I wanted us to be doing it. It's a kind of writing that I respond to. The funny thing is that I respond to that kind of writing personally as a director in exactly, you know, in the same way as I respond to the early Bernard Shaw. Do you know what I mean? It happens to fall within my taste. I also just knew that we had to do it and that it would suit the space, etc. But I also knew that it was a huge risk. I didn't know whether we would do it and we would empty the place, you know. That was got to be the possibility when you read a play like that. So I was just absolutely delighted that a lot of people came with us and stuck with it, who are perhaps regular audience members here and who were very pleased to have their eyes opened. But a whole load of new people. We played to 4,800 people, half of whom came to the Orange Tree for the first time. And I would wager that of those half that came to the Orange Tree for the first time, probably half of them are coming to Richmond for the first time. You could see people blundering from the station going, where are we? Mm. That's great. If it means that we've got people's attention, and it means we can theoretically in the future, artistically, there's huge possibility. It's interesting. I wouldn't want to claim that the season we've just done, that in advance I sat down and coldly, academically worked out a thematic, you know, a thematic line and therefore programmed to it. But perhaps in retrospect, it's been very interesting. The perhaps unexpected connections politically through the plays. In Pomona, you've got a group of people who are effectively, without talking about it, asking themselves the question, how is it possible to be good in the modern world? And perhaps it isn't possible. And also a very quite interesting thing of actually what do we choose to know or not to know, given the wealth of information that we have at our disposal? All of those same questions turned up in widowers' houses. The young doctor, Trench, is facing exactly the same thing. How? What does it mean to be good in a capitalist London? And what do I choose to know and what do I choose to acknowledge about how where my income comes from? So that was fascinating to see those two plays set next to each other. With Doris Lessing's play, completely you had a young man, rather disturbingly, to a cultured, educated, liberal audience, somewhat disturbingly saying, I'm not interested in politics. I don't want to know. I want to lead a quiet life. I want a house. I want to settle down. That's the future for my generation. We don't want grand ideas. And that was made for quite uncomfortable viewing for a lot of people, particularly for when they've come to see a play by a sort of iconic writer, Nobel Prize winning writer, and from the 50s, I think people sort of expected perhaps a feminist look back in anger, but got a much more strange and at times uncomfortable experience, I think. Which, strangely enough, did link back to Pomona, because a lot of the audience that here that are, as I say, liberal with a small L, were disturbed to see a play that seemed to be questioning whether it was possible to be good, whether it was possible to make the world a better place. Mm. And so, weirdly, there were links between the Doris Lessing and Ali's play.
Do you want to just quickly wrap up the season that's just gone, your inaugural season? Because I think some of us may have failed, many of us were last failed to get to see the new Alice Birch play and so on. If you could, in the distance as well, yeah. If you just kind of, as it were, just trot through those, and also maybe with a view to saying what you learnt as a result of those programme decisions.
Yeah, so I mentioned to Dear Sharon and Bernard Shaw, fantastic to have Deborah Bruce's The Distance. Deborah is a director of my generation, really, who's turned to writing, to playwriting, relatively recently. This was, I think, her second play. And she's an absolutely fantastic writer, it turns out. And it was a wonderful premise that she chose, which was of a mother with young children who decides that her young children are better off with their father, because whatever it is that you are supposed to feel as a mother, she just didn't feel it, which of course is a sort of big, touched on a big taboo area. She expressed it in the form of a brilliantly funny, well-observed, if you like, modern, well-made play. But the basic premise was extremely arresting. So that was thrilling to have. And we're going to bring that back in the next season. It's coming back here. And we're co-producing it with Sheffield Theatres. And so it will play up at Sheffield Theatres Crucible Studio for a month and then come down here. And so audiences, which we were turning away in droves, will get a chance to see it here again. So that's fantastic. And then to do Alice Birch's play was terrific, because one of the things about this season was that I realised as I was programming it again, it wasn't a governing idea, but it emerged, was that I seemed to be interested in early plays. If you're a young writer, by definition, it's an early play. But with Alice Birch, she's still young, but this was a play that had been written a few years ago and had been unproduced. And I thought it really needed hearing. And you got this strong sense of a dramatic voice emerging for the first time. And actually, though Pomona, as you say, in some ways was a quite extreme example of something and stuck out, perhaps one might say, to a lot of people, Alice's play took them to quite a dark place. In fact, what seemed to be a quirky middle-class dinner party play as it started, turned into something not what I think an audience would expect, which is a certain kind of, like a sort of modern Eggbornean social comedy, actually turned into something much more expressive, poetic, dark, and unusual. And so you know, that was thrilling to have in the space, I thought. Again, wonderful to have Paulette Randall come here to direct a brilliant cast in Mustafa Matura's play. Mustafa is interesting. He's a writer, still very much with us, much celebrated as a young man. And when I started work, I fell in love with his writing straight away. This is the time, for instance, when the National Theatre did The Coup of his. And I was working there then. And I thought, this writer is absolutely fantastic. But I noticed in the last sort of 20 years, him going off people's radar. And I would mention his name and people would go, oh, who's that? So I thought, all right, this is, in a way, that's a strand of work which I'm interested in pursuing, which is the recent past. We're incredibly wasteful theatre writing culture. We've got this abundance of writers, wave after wave, doing incredible new work, unlike any other country, frankly, really. But it happens one production, and it'll often be for 3 weeks at the theatre upstairs, and it gets talked about as if everybody's seen it, but actually about 2,000 people have seen it. Mm. So I thought it'd be great to have a look at that again, and I was really pleased, and then that brought a whole other new audience in, and it's been terrific, yeah, because each production's brought in new people.
We should move now to 2015/2016, and if you could very kindly outline what it is the public you're swelling audience are going to be encountering in the coming 5 to 6 months.
So we've got a season that we're just announcing from September through to January, which has the classic mix of new and unexpected revivals knocking against each other, really. One of last year's big hits, Pomona, is actually going to transfer to the National Theatre's Temporary Theatre, and then on to its hometown, or at least the hometown of the writer and where the play is set, which is Manchester. It's going to the Royal Exchange, main space there, about which we're terribly thrilled, and that's going to be very exciting. Back here in September, we're working with the brilliant Snapdragon Productions, whose artistic director, Eleanor Rode, is going to we're going to co-produce the first revival of a play from the 1980s by Sharman MacDonald called When We Were Women. Sharman is a great, great writer. This is a relatively early play of hers, which has a wonderful tone to it. It's funny, touching, very, very evocative, and a unique tone of voice. And so that will be brilliant as a sort of contemporary rediscovery. In September, I'm going to direct the first London production in a very, very long time of a play that once used to be famous, which is Terence Rattigan's very first big hit, French Without Tears. I seem to have a penchant for people's early plays, and so it'll be fascinating to see that. In many ways, it's about a group of young men who go to France to study French for their diplomatic exam, and then get entangled with strange new problems like girls. And I always think it's the template play for the History Boys, so I think it'll be fascinating to see that. And then I'm really, really proud because we're going to co-produce with Sheffield Theatres the sort of remount then of last year's big, big, big success here, which was Deborah Bruce's new play, The Distance, which is coming back. It's going to play up at the Crucible Theatre's studio in October and then come back for a run here in November. And I think it's going to be brilliant to see that play. It felt really important last year, and so many people wanted to see it. We were turning away people in droves. It'll be fantastic to see that again. And then at Christmas, we have something that's new here, which is that for the first time, we're able to offer something for very young children and families, which is Dania Miller's amazing performance of Michael Morpurgo's I Believe in Unicorns by Wizard Productions. They're going to come as a visiting company. And that's going to be great, because I've always felt that our auditorium, with its upholstered bench seating wrapped around, is a wonderful place for young children, for storytelling. And we routinely use it for our Shakespeare work with schools, but very rarely for work outside that. And so that's going to be another first for us. So it's a mixed bag of things, yes. Which is what we like.
Is it the case that, as it were, in this ground zero of funding from the Arts Council, you actually have now a partnership model as your way forward? I don't know how you see it, explaining how you make this work financially.
I always wanted the Orange Tree to work more openly with other companies and other theatres to make work. So that's something that I wanted to do anyway, to be perfectly honest. And so working with Snapdragon and Eleanor Road, working with Daniel Evans at Sheffield, working with Wizard Productions, feels entirely natural. It so happens that, yes, I think the way forward for this theatre is indeed a mixture of in-house productions and then co-productions and then visiting productions. And I think that's a way in which we can make it work, but also deliver a dynamic and diverse range of work for people here in Richmond.
But is the role of the Orange Tree now to be a bit of a kind of kick up the backside of the rest of London theatre, particularly if it's not going to be a subsidised theatre in the same way the others are? It maybe has a more of a hungry, radical energy than some of the other theatres might even have now.
Well, I think we can be a bit, we can hopefully go on being a bit cheeky. I think that's the way to put it, maybe. And I think perhaps a bit of a magpie, I mean, is also the thing.
A very broad question for the final question, which is just that, taking one step on from that, generally, do you feel, notwithstanding the climate of austerity and cuts, which I guess is with us now for some more years, do you feel there is a... do you feel confident about theatre in this country? Do you feel that, given, I suppose, rapid technological change, demographic change and so on, there is what we think of now as quite a golden period can be sustained, or are we? Are things at risk?
Certainly things will be at risk. You know, at a sort of ordinary level, the funding climate is not going to get any better, and therefore, all sorts of other theatres and companies will find themselves in similar kinds of straits as we have found. So that is an unpleasant and depressing short-term future to contemplate. There's no question about it. But zooming out, look, the kind of energy and creativity and the sort of will to make theatre happen is never ever going to go away. You know what I mean? There's been these things always go in waves. We've had a big wave of writers in the last 20 years. Some of that has undoubtedly come about because of there were probably 10 good years of funding where the funding all went up and everything, and that was great, and it has produced great results. It's not going to go away, do you know what I mean? And people's urge to create theatre is not going, it's not going anywhere, do you know what I mean? So I'm kind of fond of a slightly quirky thing that John Osborne is quoted as saying, when somebody said, you know, stepping back, don't you think the way civilization is going, that the theatre is dying? And he said, of course it's dying. And it will go on dying, just as it always has done.
That's a perfect place to leave it, I think. Thank you very much, Paul Miller. Thanks.
Thank you very much.